Here on Canadian Spirit, we cover all the mysteries that the supernatural and the paranormal have to offer. And through countless hours of research and investigations, we have made a significant breakthrough in the area of extraterrestrial visitation here on the Playa Blue Dot that we call home. I am, of course, speaking about the insidious infiltration of our suburban and rural areas with hundreds, if not thousands, of otherworldly visitors that have lived right here under our noses for generations, just waiting for their time to enact whatever dastardly plan they have for us puny earthlings. In this special report, I will take you on an enlightening journey that will once and for all prove that we are not alone in the universe, that our galactic neighborhood is far more vibrant and full of life than we could have possibly imagined, and that life is here. This is the Raccoon Report. Raccoons, or Procyoloter as the scientific community calls them, are said to be small, bear-like creatures with a highly arched back, flat feet, dense, soft gray and black fur, complete with a long, bushy striped tail and a dark mask pattern on their face. Raccoons are typically 2 to 3 feet long, 9 to 10 inches tall, when on all fours, and weigh anywhere from 10 to 30 pounds. Now, according to AlienUFOResearch.com, the alien species known as the worker greys are described as follows. Quote, they are much smaller than the other greys at around 3.5 to 4.5 feet tall, stubbier fingers, arms, and legs. They don't seem to be as intelligent as the taller greys and do much of the grunt work during probing and abductions, while the taller greys work on more scientific areas like collecting sperm and egg samples and working on genetic materials, end quote. Here we begin to see some similarities between the two, but this is hardly conclusive proof for anyone, let alone my skeptical self. When I made this connection back in early 2020, I decided that I had to dig deeper and really find out if there was ever truly a connection between this seemingly mundane species of woodland creature and extraterrestrials from beyond the stars. I spoke with MUFON agents in Environment Canada and began compiling for myself numerous accounts of both raccoon and UFO sightings over the last 10 years, and mapped them both out independently of one another. The process was painstaking, taking months to compile the data. My kids worried for my mental health. My parents begged me to seek out professional counseling. I didn't eat, sleep, or shower for over a week. But I knew that I was onto something big. And in early 2021, a year after my journey began, I had all of the data compiled, every sighting over the last decade sitting right there in front of me. I knew right then and there that I was on the verge of a groundbreaking discovery. The two maps were exactly the same. Wherever raccoons were sighted, UFOs were seen in that same area at that same time. The evidence was piling up, but what I had was coincidental at best, and hardly provable in a scientific setting. I needed more proof. I had to seek out and speak with an expert. Okay, we're recording. State your name for the record, please.
Bubba Jim O'Leary.
Thank you for agreeing to speak to me, Mr. O'Leary. I was hoping that we could...
Nah, don't go calling me Mr. Mr. O'Leary was my dad's name. That old bastard. He used to take me and my sister out back of the stick shed, and he used to beat us silly with a willow switch. I don't beat my kids on the count that I can't have them, you know, on account of my one testicle. Just call me Bubba.
Right. Bubba, as I was saying, I was hoping that we could speak in regards to the raccoon information that we spoke about earlier. Have you heard or found anything that might be of any use to my research?
Oh, hell yeah, brother. I've been trapping them little bastards as far back as this part of the decade. They smart, they is. Almost as smart as a 10-year-old kid. Not that I've been trapping any of them, that is.
I was wondering more about the hibernation behaviors of these creatures. In your experience, Bubba, do raccoons even hibernate, or Are they even active during the winter?
Aw, brother. This is one of the greatest mysteries of the raccoon. You see, these critters don't necessarily hibernate. But the strangest thing happens when the cold gets to them. Them raccoons, it's almost unnatural. They enter into this strange state, not quite asleep, not quite awake, hardly alive even, but still able to follow you with their eyes. It's like they ain't breathing, but they're still there, watching you.
Bubba went on to explain, when the brutal Canadian winters hit, the raccoon enters into a kind of hypersleep. The pulse of the creature drops considerably, while they live off the fat stores that have been accumulated in their bodies, especially the tails. Over a long period of time in this hypersleep phase, some raccoons could even lose their tails as the nutrients from them are depleted. That's when I had my aha moment. The reason that so many alien abductees never report tails on their abductors is likely because their long interstellar travelers render their tails inert, useless, and upon waking from their stellar sleep, they're simply discarded. I decided to be bold and talk to Bubba about my theory.
You're saying that raccoons are aliens, huh?
That's my working theory, yes.
Well, let me tell you, Mr. McMillan, in my expert opinion, I believe you to be correct. I myself am a bit of a ufologist, you know.
The term is ufologist, but...
Whatever. Point is that I always knew that there was something more to them than meets the eye. They're always rifling around in the garbage all the time. It's rare to see them ever eat some. Oftentimes they just toss trash around, make a hell of a mess, and scamper off. At first, I thought they were just little assholes. But now that you mention it, do you know what the most common type of UFO spot in this country is, Mr. McMillan?
Yes, it's the cigar-shaped UFO.
Exactamundo. Raccoons are nearsighted. They can't hardly see shit. What if they're the ones piloting around the cigar-shaped UFOs? But they's got them bad eyes, you know? They wander around here on the surface of this here Earth, and the next thing you know, they come across a shiny trash can, and they think, ah, there's my spaceship, but it's all full of trash. They mistake the garbage cans for their off-Earth craft.
I had to admit, Bubba had quite the idea on his hands, and it only proved to bolster my theory. I thanked him and prepared to hang up the phone when he said,
Well, listen, I shouldn't be telling you this. Could be dangerous. But if you really want to go down this road, keep this phrase in mind. Dancing naked in the minefield.
Dancing naked in the minefield. It seemed Bubba was into this just as deep as I was. Possibly deeper. All I knew in that moment was that now I had my next lead. A quick Google search of the phrase was really all I needed. The first results that came up were from Amazon.com as a paperback novel released in the year 2000 by one Dr. Carey Mullis. As far as scientific credentials go, Dr. Carey Mullis is as beyond reproach as his resume is incredibly impressive. He's an accomplished biochemist who, in April of 1983, came up with a technique to amplify parts of DNA molecules called the polymerase chain reaction, or PCR, which allow researchers to identify fragments of DNA and make unlimited copies of it. It was a game changer in biochemistry, molecular biology, medicine, and even crime scene forensics. The discovery of the PCR technique even won Dr. Carey Mullis the Nobel Prize in Chemistry back in 1993. Impressed? I thought about purchasing the book to further my research based on Bubba's cryptic message. But I was broke, so I pirated the shit out of that thing. The book was a fascinating read regarding Dr. Mullis's life and research into genetic sequencing, isolation, and the effects of radioactive isotopes. Some of the more hilarious anecdotes were about how he used to keep beer in a lab fridge next to his radioactive samples, much to the chagrin of his fellow researchers. But it was the chapter entitled No Aliens Allowed that took my hypothesis from where it was to a full-blown proven theory. Let's rewind. The date, April 1985. The location, Mendocino County, California. An isolated cabin sat in the woods, empty and devoid of all activity within. The only sounds to cut the silence of the night were the croaks of red-legged frogs and the sound of crunching of gravel that heralded the doctor's arrival. He always enjoyed the solitude of this cabin. It gave him a place to decompress from the stresses of the lab. He quickly unloaded his belongings into the cabin and switched on the solar battery-powered lights before making his way towards the outhouse, which lay around 50 feet from the entrance of the cabin. But he would never arrive at his destination. The universe, it seems, had something else in mind for Dr. Carrie Mullis that night. From Dancing Naked in the Minefield, I will quote this encounter in Mullis's own words. Quote, "I walked down the steps, turned right, and then at the far end of the path, under a fir tree, there was something glowing. I pointed my flashlight at it anyhow. It only made it whiter where the beam landed. It seemed to be a raccoon. I wasn't frightened. Later, I wondered if it could have been a hologram projected from God knows where. The raccoon spoke.
'Good evening, Doctor,'
it said. I said something back. I don't remember what. Probably, hello. The next thing I remember, it was early in the morning. I was walking along a road uphill from my house. What went through my head as I walked down toward my house was, 'What the hell am I doing here?' I had no memory of the night before. I thought maybe I'd passed out and spent the night outside. But clothes are damp in the summer in Mendocino, and my clothes were dry, and they weren't dirty." End quote. Here we see a typical example of what is often called missing time, which is common in encounters of extraterrestrials or other events of high strangeness. Mullis goes on to explain that the flashlight that he had been carrying was missing when he came to his senses and was never able to locate it. When he returned to the cabin, the lights were still on, and his belongings had been strewn about across the floor. The clock hanging on the wall read 6:30 a.m., a difference of 6 hours that the doctor could not account for whatsoever. Curious and desperate for answers, the doctor searched the area for clues. Coming to a spot that he had long favorited amongst the other places in the woods, a place that would often fill him with feelings of peace and love. But now, it instilled fear and panic in him. What on earth happened to Dr. Carrie Mullis that night? What did that raccoon do to him? We may never know. But what we do know is what Mullis did in retaliation towards his extraterrestrial furball a year later. We'll read from Dancing Naked in the Minefield again. Quote, "My D-cells cut a clean beam into the darkest part of the forest. There stood an old hollowed bay laurel glowing right out of a little waterfall full of ferns. I was 50 feet away from it. I loved it, but it had become the focus of my fears. John Wayne at my side, wearing some kind of hat that I had donned for the occasion, said, 'Let him have it, kid.' I opened up with the AR-15 and riddled the area of the laurel. Blown to hell, kid. I began screaming obscenities, having heard that in ancient Korean tradition, this was meant to scare negative energies away." End quote. This seems to have worked, because after that, the dread of this pleasure spot was gone, as if exorcised from the area. Mullis vowed to himself to speak to no one of the alien raccoon, and decided to bury that thought forever. That was until the year 1994. After winning the Nobel Prize for Chemistry, Mullis decided what better way to celebrate the win than a party in his cabin in the woods. Most of us horror aficionados would shudder at the thought, but this was a man of science. He gathered some of his closest friends and colleagues together and began the celebrations. Mullis would pass on the story to UFO researcher Bill Chalker, who later wrote about it saying, quote, "Another person encountered a glowing raccoon between the cabin and the toilet. This was a friend of Mullis who did not know of the raccoon story and was a first-time visitor. During a party at the cabin after the announcement of the Nobel Prize win in 1993, this man did not stick around and fled up the hill toward the house. On the way, he encountered a strange, small, glowing man, which then suddenly enlarged into a full-sized man, who said something like, 'I'll see you tomorrow.' The man, who was not experiencing a drug or alcohol-induced hallucination, left with a friend without informing anyone. They returned to their hotel in a nearby town. That night, the man inexplicably found himself outside the hotel car park, troubled and terrified by the impression he had somehow been back at Mullis's cabin. He and his friend returned the following night to the cabin the celebratory party was carrying on from the night before. As the man arrived, he was shocked to see the full-sized man, as seen as an enlarging apparition the night before, drive up in a car. This was too much for the first-time visitor. He left in a panic, holding Mullis, somehow responsible for the previous night's events. Sometime later, in tears, he revealed the full story to Mullis, who identified the man as his friend that he had seen as his elderly neighbor. Kerry Mullis confirmed all of this and more when I spoke with him recently. Mullis checked with his neighbor, and sure enough, he had come to the party on the second night, arriving to be seen by the terrified visitor. However, he was certain that he was not there on the first night, not in person, and not lurking as a glowing raccoon, or as a small glowing man that enlarged into the vision of himself." End quote. But the strangeness doesn't end there. Once the word got out about Mullis's strange glowing raccoon infestation, his daughter and her fiancé also came forward with their own story that they had vowed never to share regarding that very same cabin. The date in question is unfortunately not quoted, but what is the harrowing experience of Louise Mullis. She was at the cabin with her fiancé for a weekend when she stepped outside around midnight. The last thing she remembers was seeing a small, glowing creature out by the fir trees. Later, when her fiancé noted that she had not returned, stepped out to check on her. Mullis writes in his book about what happened next, quote, "Her fiancé had spent the time frantically searching for her everywhere, screaming her name. She was nowhere to be found. The first thing she remembered was walking that same road on which I'd found myself, hearing her fiancé calling her name. She had no idea where she'd been," end quote. It's said that after that night, Mullis began searching for answers, as I now was. He spoke with leading physicists like Dr. Michio Kaku and writers like Whitley Strieber. He, as a scientist, began to gather data on this extraterrestrial raccoon problem during the writing of his memoir that I pirated. From later interviews of Bill Chalker, he says that Mullis had a certain working theorem in regards to these creatures. Quote, "Given this sort of activity on his property, it perhaps isn't surprising that Kerry Mullis told me that he thinks the nature of his experience is even stranger than abducting ETs. Instead, he speculates about multidimensional physics a la Michio Kaku's Hyperspace, 1994, at a macrocosmic level. Like anything can goddamn happen at the speed of light is not really the limit in terms of interactions with other cultures or whatever. This stuff, grabbing people or subjecting them to all sorts of experiments, is just anthropology at a level that we don't quite understand yet." End quote. It was at this moment that I knew what I had to do. I had to track down Dr. Kerry Mullis and speak to him for myself. This man seemed to be the key to unlocking the next level of this mystery, and I would not be deterred in finding him. Until I was. While searching for Dr. Kerry Mullis, I noted that there were no records of his place of employment or residence. After digging deeper, I discovered why. Dr. Carrie Mullis was dead, and had been since August 7th, 2019. Some say it was pneumonia. Others say it was Anthony Fauci himself who killed him. Others still think that it was the CIA trying to keep a lid on this whole story of these intergalactic visitors that we call raccoons. But maybe, just maybe, if this news got out, there would be pandemonium. Society itself would screech to a halt. Terror and panic would set in. We'd see human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria. While the jury may still be out on what the implications may be on releasing this information on an official level, all I know for certain is that Mullis stood his ground about the alien raccoon until his dying day. Refusing to state whether it was an elaborate hoax or prank, he wrote about it shortly before his death. Quote, "I wouldn't try to publish a scientific paper about these things, because I can't do any experiments. I can't make glowing raccoons appear. I can't buy them from a scientific supply house to study. I can't cause myself to be lost again for several hours. But I don't deny what happened. It was what science calls anecdotal, because it only happened in a way that you can't reproduce. But it happened." End quote. While my search for answers from Dr. Mullis was at an end, I have worked alongside my colleagues in the UFO community on this issue. Some call me a madman, others say that I'm a harmless quack. But a handful of brave individuals know that my evidence is irrefutable. Together, we've discovered this grand conspiracy is slowly being disclosed to the public through drip feeds of truth. A prime example of this is the 2014 Marvel Cinematic film, Guardians of the Galaxy. One of the central figures in this film is none other than Rocket Raccoon. The character of Rocket was first introduced in Marvel Preview No. 7, released in the summer of 1976, which coincidentally was the same year as the famous Tehran UFO incident that involved Iran's Air Force. Which may be a coincidence, but we can't deny that an anthropomorphized alien raccoon who is both charming and a badass would act to normalize the relations of humans and these armed, potentially hostile ETs. But Kelly, you say, how dare you defame Stan Lee and his wondrous fantastical creations? But, dear listener, we must take into account that the fact that Stan Lee was certainly not above working with the American government to produce propaganda. Take, for example, his own personal history. After leaving Timely Comics, which was Marvel's predecessor, he enlisted in the American Armed Forces, landing himself a job in their propaganda department, where Captain America, the first Avenger, was conceptualized to sell American war bonds. So then, how can we say that Lee's personal ties to the American government was ever dissolved? Perhaps the introduction of Rocket Raccoon was sanctioned by the shadowy figures in the background to slowly encourage happy and welcoming attitudes towards the raccoons. However, not all of these raccoons in media are portrayed as benevolent. Some underground resistance members have infiltrated media giants to spread warnings that the threat of these creatures from the stars. Back in 2002, a courageous development team created a video game based off of the cinematic flop that was Disney's Treasure Planet. Treasure Planet: Battle at Porcian was released in the same year as the movie and features a young Royal Navy cadet who does battle against a deadly fleet of, you guessed it, extraterrestrial raccoons. No matter what side you fall on in this debate, I hope that this documentary has better enlightened you and all of our listeners in regards to this newly emerging paranormal phenomenon in the world. Should the world's spy agencies not murder me in my sleep? Or if I come across any further information, I'll be sure to update you as this investigation continues. Until then, stay safe, stay alert, and stay vigilant. Good night, everybody. This has been a mockumentary by Spirit Shack Productions. All of the information presented is based on factual information, but twisted to meet a particular narrative. If you take anything away from this episode, it should be that while facts may look irrefutable on the surface, their use of and connection to the subject matter presented should be properly vetted before being believed. Special thanks to Carl Casey from White Bat Audio for their use of their music in this episode, and to VoiceChanger.io for their voice filters. Have a good night, everyone.